ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
The Trump administration is so determined to deport as many people as possible, which is why people aren't used to seeing these kinds of arrests and sometimes even violent arrests on the streets.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
This story contains distressing content and includes some strong language. Listener discretion is advised.
It's really early in the morning on a chilly day in July, and we've come down to a country footy oval in the middle of nowhere. I'm here with Andy Burns. She's another journalist, and we're working on this podcast together. She's getting a little bit excited.
Take a deep breath.
I'm just walking.
But you're like charging ahead.
I actually don't know how to walk slowly.
No, I don't think you know how to do anything slowly.
Morning, girls. Morning, man.
I do have to confess that it is actually my first time at a country football match. But you, Andy, are quite familiar with this environment.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to country footy before and I'm excited. Like, it's the last home game of the season before finals kick off. We arrive at the home of the Harrow Balmoral Southern Roos. There's blue kangaroos on the trees, you know, the barbecue's going, the fire pits are cranking, and it's going to be a great day of footy. So the game kicks off. And you can see all the utes pulled up watching the game. If someone kicks a goal, it's toot, 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 toot. You know, the old scoreboard's there with the metal plates. You've got to change yourself, and someone works in that scoreboard all day, so someone has to bring them beers and food while they're out there.
It all sounds very analogue.
It's pretty old school.
Get back this way where the crowd is. Come on, crowd.
Balmoral, where we are, is this tiny town on the Glenelg River, and it's in the middle of Western Victoria, sheep farming country. It's about as rural as you can get west of the Grampians National Park.
For the last couple of weeks before this day, we've been sort of chatting on and off with the club president here about the possibility of coming and doing an interview.
Yeah, and it looked like it was going to go ahead, but then all of a sudden, ghost town. The club committee won't talk to us. Nobody will. But then, a few days out from our trip, we find someone. So there's this fellow who coaches the under-14s, a guy named Ed Ferguson. He's a lovely teddy bear of a man. Beautiful, friendly, and he's been a strong member of this club for a long time. He's played over 100 games here, even before he started coaching.
He's in with the Bricks.
He's in with the Bricks out there. So I called him up and we had some good chats and he was like, do you know what? Why don't you just come down and see what we're all about?
Oh, well done. Oh, beautiful.
And so we turn up.
Hello.
On this Saturday morning, this chilly Saturday morning in Balmoral.
Are you Ed?
Yeah, I am.
This is Andy.
And it's like the sea's kind of part for us, you know, we're clearly outsiders and people are going to tolerate us, but they don't really want to engage. They're highly suspicious of what we're here for and what we're trying to do. We know, at the very least, even if the president isn't happy to see us and we might not be entirely welcome, we know Ed's down there on the boundary line coaching the under-14s, and that's going to be our touchstone for the day. We approach the boundary line and they're all standing there in the huddle and it's all these little boys. They're under 14, so they're only little tackers.
You guys, the amount of kicks you got, getting it out of there, playing defensive footy, is really good. Held them up really well.
And they're all standing there kind of in this circle with Ed in the middle and they've got their hand on each other's shoulder, like brothers in arms kind of thing, listening to what Ed has to say.
It's going really well, guys. So you're rolling up, getting in the contest. It's just hard, we've got no one else to kick to. But
you know, Ed is invested in this too. He takes it as seriously and with as much care and passion as an AFL coach on grand final day.
If you get it up down this end of the ground in the mid, just see if we can hold it up. That way you guys can reset and roll forward and be that next kick out. Roll forward!
Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward! Roll forward
You're clean, mate. Clean.
So the under-14s match finishes, they lose, and we run up into the change rooms, which are the same change rooms that the senior men will use, and everybody goes there, like it's the ritual. And then it's like, okay, let's get down to business. So we take Ed outside, and the three of us huddle by this fire pit because it's like bone-shatteringly cold, and the interview starts.
Yeah. So you coach the under-13s, the young fellas?
Yeah, the 14s, yep.
Under-14s.
Yeah, the footy club is sort of, I don't know, it is more important than you could believe, like for the kids to have somewhere to go on the weekend. Like, I just don't know what they'd do otherwise.
It starts to rain, and so people gather under the balcony behind us in a peanut gallery-style audience. And they're watching Ed give an interview to the ABC. They all know what he's here to talk about.
I think something's got to get said just to show that we're not a bunch of backward weirdos. And you know,
they don't want him to do it because we aren't here to watch a country footy match and have a great day.
If you guys are asking questions, someone's going to answer them. So.
We're here because we're investigating something pretty dark.
Pretty easy to stick your head in the sand.
An incident that has shaped this town, and everybody knows about it. It's something no one wants to talk about. And this guy stands there and delivers it. And I just remember thinking, this guy is so brave.
I believe your words were, he's got balls of steel.
Yeah. And he tells us something that literally stops us both in our tracks.
I don't know. If you guys could come here and no one said anything and then you went away and gone, oh, geez, they want a bit of rope down there.
He says to us, I don't want people to think that we don't mind a bit of rape down here.
You know, like, I don't want you to go away thinking that.
And the fact that he even has to say that is so startling, like, what? You know, and he's this one guy who's saying it for the entire club, that it's not okay by him what's happened. And he wants the rest of Australia to know that.
Ed is talking about something that happened here, just over the road from this footy club, one night almost 10 years ago. A rape after a 21st birthday party involving three school friends in the back of a caravan. The men were convicted. But this story is not just about that crime. What we're investigating is what came after. How the town itself responded.
And if we started this story at the football club, there's a reason for that. Because here in Balmoral, the club is the town and the town is the club. This is the church at the centre of town life and everybody is involved.
I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns.
And this is episode one of Hometown Boys, a six-part series from Background Briefing. Just outside Balmoral is this farm covered in gum trees. It used to be home to a woman we're going to call Elise.
Where our farm was, it was kind of like slow slopes, and then in the background you've got like your grampians, you've got the beautiful sunsets. I'm a big nature girl, so I love everything like that.
Most people in Balmoral will know who she is already, but she doesn't want the whole world to know her real name. She's about 11 when she moves to Balmoral in 2007. And it doesn't take long for her to get to know this place.
Like the one pub, the one milk bar, the bowls club, like a rural supplies shop, a servo.
And there's this moment when she's taken through the schoolyard, you know, as this new girl.
And everyone was kind of coming up to me, having a look kind of thing, like, you know, new kid, small town kind of vibe.
And there's only 22 kids in her year level.
You see them at school every day, you see them on the weekends at sporting events, you see them at parties, you see them after school, at training, like, you're just always hanging out. So you're kind of, like, you become close by, like, literally physically being around each other all of the time.
It's a kind of closeness that can be suffocating because you're aware of who everybody is, who they're connected with, everything about them.
I know them all. I know their families. I know their parents. I know their siblings. I know what they did on the weekends. I know what they like at school. I know what they like in the classroom. I know how they spoke to the teachers, like all the things.
It becomes clear that if you want to fit in, you need to join the footy netball club. And so she does.
You have, like, your netball sides, like your C grade, B grade, A grade. Start at the youngest, you go to the oldest.
And for the boys' footy, it's the same.
The senior footy game will be, like, the last game because that's, like, you know, the most important, obviously, for the boys.
Every single weekend, she's at this club with every single person in her class.
You've got some, like, club rooms that probably need doing up. You've got your kitchen that's too small. You've got, like, your fire pits that are rusty. You know, you've got your mud on the ground. The usual old dudes hanging out by the goalposts. So, you know. Someone's kid's laying in the mud. Like, it's country footy. It's nothing fancy, nothing special. You get there really early. You leave late.
Her brother James, which is what we're calling him, he plays footy too. He's a couple of years younger and he's right into it.
I definitely belong to the team. I have my position on the halfback line and sort of ran the defensive structure of the under-14s.
And being good at footy gives James a bit of social cred in the town.
Yeah, I love my footy. So when I felt like I was sort of at the peak of my powers there, I felt pretty untouchable.
And that's something that everyone wants to be.
Well, I absolutely adored going and training with the senior boys as an under-14er. I used to idolise a few of them. Looking up to the best footballers, you were sort of in awe of how they went about it. Just wanted to be around them, get their attention as much as I could, have a kick with them. Like, I mean, it felt good to be a part of a team like that.
It's a bit of a family affair. Their mum is managing his team. Their dad volunteers as umpire. And he does a little bit of work as water boy on the oval. They're slowly sort of entrenching themselves in the community through this club. It's like a vehicle for them to be part of something bigger. Elise is also, you know, making a couple of girlfriends at this time. They have sleepovers on the weekend. She starts dating this local kid too, Darcy Trotman. And he's the under-17s footy captain.
Yeah, like a girl and eventually... But he asked her out and see what happens, and yeah, it goes on from there.
Yeah, we were together for a while. He was my first boyfriend.
I guess I was in her class and she was mine, so probably see her nearly every day and nearly every weekend.
It's a simple teenage romance, but they're in love. And they do, you know, fun, like, sort of coming of age stuff, like learning to drive. Like, you know, he remembers teaching her to drive in this beat up old Barina.
My old man taught me when I was pretty young, so. Yeah, we were just driving around the paddocks and skidding out and all the rest of it.
We'd go camping, like I'd go with his family camping or bush bashing and stuff, like just hanging out, just, you know, having fun, being silly.
There's this really cute photo of them like on the dance floor and you know those really awkward moments when you're trying to dance and you're terrible. And yeah, you've got your arms like awkwardly around the neck of your partner and he's wearing like a shirt and a tie. And you've got your formal dress on, which you think is the most, you know, classy thing that you've ever owned. That was them. That was that couple that were, you know, finding their way together through adolescence kind of thing.
Yeah. She's my first girlfriend and, yeah, first person I loved, that's for sure. Yeah, I spent a lot of time with her family, for sure. Like, even going down and watching the footy and stuff like that.
It was like, because his family are lovely. His family are lovely, and I just adored his mum.
Darcy's family is part of the establishment in Balmoral, so his last name means something. And if you want to know who these families are, there's this pretty handy guide for the outsider, right?
Yes, the Western Hotel. And, you know, if you walk in the doors of the Western Hotel, it's a classic Australian pub, you know, hasn't changed since day dot. And on the walls, there's all this memorabilia, all of these anglers clubs, fishing, sporting clubs, you know, football, war memorabilia. And the names on the bottom of all the photos, they come up again and again. Bloomfield, Merrifield, and Trotman, which is Darcy's family.
Yeah, my uncles and even my old man, they've all played a lot of football there, and my nan coached a lot of netball, and yeah, a few of them are definitely probably club legends, and yeah.
You know, his dad's a Trotman, his mum was a McPhee, they've been here for generations.
Yeah, all my family pretty much come from there, mum and dad's side. Once they got there, they sort of never left, so.
It's very clear that, like, that tradition and those families, that those ties run deep, and no more clear than in the Western Hotel in the main drag of Balmoral. And it does bring to mind something from that classic novel To Kill a Mockingbird, which is, you know, about a tiny small town where something really bad happens. You know, the new teacher to the school turns up on day one and she tries to give this kid, Cunningham, some money for his lunch and he won't take it. And the protagonist, Scout, pipes up and says, oh, well, here's a Cunningham, miss.
As if she should just understand what that means.
It means that, you know, the Cunninghams don't take anything they can't pay back. And so that kind of shorthand becomes like a way to understand the world around you in a place like this. And so Elise is keenly aware that those families are kind of at the centre of this universe.
It's very hard to actually blend and get to know people outside of your clique, because if you kind of try, it's kind of like, why are you talking to me? What do you want? Kind of thing.
And despite the fact that, you know, she's been here for several years now, she's not ever going to be one of those families. One of Darcy's best mates is a Bloomfield, a kid called Sean.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with him when I was younger, probably all the way up till I was probably 15 or something like that. We used to go to the pool and all that all the time.
They're like classic country boys. They live a couple of doors up from each other, so literally I think one house separates them.
I guess we've got a lot of boys in that town have the same hobbies, you know, your footy, your shooting, your fishing.
Yeah, BCF and fun. But he, you know, he plays a little bit of football, but I wouldn't say that he was like a footballer in the sense of, like, you know, Darcy's the captain of the under 17s and, you know, he's well known for that. I think Sean's social capital comes from being a bit of a class clown.
He was very much a do hectic things to get attention kind of kid. Like, you know, everyone has that one kid in the classroom that'll, like, throw a chair or try and slam a door or scream at the teacher.
He mucks up a bit at school.
I might have been grade 6 or grade 7, and there was a whole commotion, and he had lost his temper and thrown chairs at the teachers and then, like, slammed all the doors and broken something and, like, ran down the street. And, yeah, definitely he was, like, hilarious at times. For everyone else in the class, that was, like, entertaining as hell.
And James, Elise's little brother, he remembers Sean at school too.
Sean was sort of like a tag-along sort of a fella. Pretty harmless, you know, funny in a different way in terms of doing silly things. Yeah, he was a wild bit of gear, that one. But harmless, just do stupid shit for a laugh sort of thing. And, yeah, you kind of felt a bit sorry for Sean in a way.
Sean comes out of a context. Like, the Bloomfields, they don't live in a fancy house by any means. It's an old weatherboard, a pretty run-down, ramshackle sort of place. They get by on their name, but they also have their struggles. His dad, he's a shearer, and he likes a drink. He's a bit of a hard doer. But the Bloomfields are just one family that's prominent on the pub walls at the Western Hotel. There's another family up there as well, the Merrifields. They're respected stalwarts of the footy club and hardworking people by all accounts, Luke Merrifull is their only son, and he's also in Elise's class. He's a handy footballer, and he's one of the popular kids at school.
Yeah, he got heaps of, like, awards and stuff for, like, football, and I think cricket as well. He was popular, like, you know, he's, like, one of the cool guys and is invited to all the parties and is a part of everything.
He's a bit of a smartass, a bit of a bully, tends to do kind of nasty pranks and tricks to get a laugh.
One kid got put in a cricket bag. I remember them towing him through the hallway and they kept dropping him. And then they, towed him around the oval and left him out there.
But as far as Darcy's concerned, everyone in town just more or less gets along.
You know, everyone sort of ends up camping together or... Yeah, like, you know, our age group, probably from my age to 3 years above me, we're always sort of mixing in, doing something together.
James knows that he's not quite one of them.
I couldn't really explain how it works, but there's definitely a hierarchy. You could definitely tell the young fellas who grew up there, and their fathers had grown up there too, and they'd all have these pretty tight, close-knit relationships and whatnot, so I wasn't a part of any of that.
And these social dynamics, they're kind of... it's almost like they hold the town together. Every single thing in this town is a well-oiled machine, and it works on the basis that everybody puts in and nobody steps out of line.
Just like her brother, Elise feels like a bit of an outsider.
My sister's always sort of struggled to fit in a way, whether it's just because girls can be nasty, and I think my sister's pretty down to earth and doesn't really put up with much shit, so she'd probably separate herself from all that crap.
She's not great at sport.
I mean, she probably didn't have she's going to hate me saying this, but the luxury of being able to play sport quite as well as other girls in the town, so she sort of struggled a bit there, so yeah, didn't have much of a social standing, to be honest.
I wouldn't say it was like a struggle, but like you had like your hierarchy and the bottom half was always kind of moving, if that makes sense. Like people were going up and down, up and down, up and down, depending on the moods of the people at the top. You know, if they, you know, cracked the shits with me and didn't want to be my friend for a week, they'd just ignore me for a week and hang out with someone else, bring someone else up. And then when they got sick of that, drop them again.
So for Elise, it means that when things come up that might make her feel uncomfortable, she has this sort of pressure from the outside not to say anything. Don't upset the apple cart.
Don't step out of line, don't say anything wrong, just, you know, do the right thing.
This idea is tested on this one night when someone hosts a party in this big cleared-out shed.
Basically, there's a massive space. You put, like, DJ decks and eskies and lights and...
and everyone's going to get pissed.
Cruisers. Lots of cruisers, UDLs, anything spirit mixes, kind of drinks, those kind of sugary, like, you know, all that shit you drink when you're 14 and that you're like, this is yum, oh my God. And then the boys would be drinking, well, trying to drink beer, but they don't really like it. So they're drinking like straight Jack Daniels out of the bottle and, you know, trying to be all tough and stuff. And then they're vomiting and it was a whole thing.
Her brother James is there too. And at one point, he decides to go outside with a mate to pee.
And we were just, like, going around the back of the shed for a piss, and we're like, holy shit, someone's having sex here.
It's a pretty public place, and there are two teenagers having sex right in front of him. And he's a bit taken aback. He's 13, he's not sexually active yet, but he's also a bit shocked because the girl looks like she's wasted. Like, she's not passed out, but she's close to it.
I mean, it looked like she was just really off her head. It looked as though she was conscious, but yeah, I think after the act, it took her a while to come back to the party.
James is looking around for cues, like, is anyone else bothered by this? Is this a problem?
And one of the older footy boys sort of grabbed us and took us away. He's like, no, don't be around this. So we're like, oh, okay.
But the people around him, they're not really concerned.
The way the whole incident went down, it just felt as though, yeah, they're like, oh, yep. Piss off, young fellas, like, you're too young for this, but, you know, there's nothing unnatural going on here.
Elise is by the fire at this party and hears about it afterwards. The guy involved is a local footy player and a bunch of boys are carrying on and backslapping him.
Like, yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, was she good? Oh, I saw her. She was really drunk. Ha ha, she was passed out. She was just laying there. Ha ha, what a starfish. Ha ha ha.
A starfish is what a guy calls a girl when she does nothing during sex.
Yeah, and they bragged about her being a starfish even though she was literally probably unconscious.
She's sort of scratching her head.
Whether she wanted it, whether she liked it, whether she enjoyed it, none of that. It's just they got a fuck and that's exciting and that's what they were bragging about. And it's funny, it's hilarious to them.
Elise doesn't really know how to respond to it. She's pretty new to the town. She's still trying to find her feet and fit in. She's trying to make the best of the situation and survive this hierarchy that she's in. And for the people around her, it's situation normal. So she doesn't say anything. And over time, Elise starts to notice that the default response to murky incidents is often, it's not that big a deal.
I remember waitressing at like the year 12 formal and going to hand one of the dads his meal, but he wasn't like able, he wasn't focusing on me handing his meal because he was too busy looking down my top. Or like being at the under 14s footy club breakout bowling event and I was playing a game of pool and one of the dads, different dad, walked past and just smacked me on the ass as hard as he could, gave me a little laugh. And again, I was like, what the fuck? And everyone's like, oh, it's fine. He probably just thought you were his daughter. And I was like, what? So lots of little things like that all the time, always being sexualized, always being objectified.
This is a small town. It's a small universe. And the fabric of the town has been carefully woven. People are bound to each other out of necessity. They need each other. The pastoralists, they need the sheep to be shorn. The shearers need a shed to work in. The school, the footy club, they need members to be on the committees to keep it all alive, to keep that machine going. And this kind of social cohesion that the town relies upon, it means that if something arises, a problem that's deeply uncomfortable to confront or even to acknowledge, sometimes that problem just needs to be pushed aside. She doesn't know it yet, but Elise is about to rupture this equilibrium.
All I can see is danger sign, danger sign, danger sign, danger sign, and no one was doing anything.
The town's very sense of itself is about to be tested.
And you go back and you just see yourself being led through the slaughterhouse. You know, you're in the little race and you're walking up and you have no idea what's behind the curtain. And you're just walking along, and then you get behind the curtain and then, boof.
Next time on Hometown Boys.
The coppers come down and then they just started asking me what happened last night, a statement, all the rest of it.
She's just in the kitchen just sobbing. She's got a blanket around her shoulders and I've never, ever seen my child that upset.
But I was thinking that some of my friends would message me and see if I was okay. I left the party and I never saw anyone again.
Background Briefing's sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Hamish Camilleri. Music composition by Emrys Cronin and Joshua Curtis. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanufa Lully. I'm Charlotte King.
And I'm Andy Burns. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.